Okay. So in Buddhism, we talk a lot about having equanimity, you know, between friends and enemies and strangers. And so he's asking, is it too idealistic in our life to think of having equanimity with our friends? You know, or is that something that we can try for? And I think implicit in your question is, what would a friendship look like if we were equanimous, if we weren't partial? Is that even possible? Because, you know, our ordinary way of looking for at things is whenever there's a friend, we equate friend and attachment, don't we? You know, friend and clinging. And enemy we equate with anger and hatred. And stranger we equate with apathy. Who cares? Okay? But if you look at it in a different way, you know, equanimity means that we have the same equal-hearted openness and receptivity and affection for everybody. You know, there's an openness and care and respect for everybody. But it doesn't mean that all of our relationships are exactly the same or that we treat everybody in the same way. Because if we just even speak of human beings on this planet, there's 5 billion of them. Some of them, at least in this life, are going to be strangers to us. In fact, most of them are probably going to be strangers to us. That doesn't mean that we have to be apathetic towards them just because they're strangers. We can remember that in past lives they were close relatives, so we can still cherish and respect those people. In the same way, because of how karma plays out, we're closer to certain people this lifetime. Yeah? Isn't it? I mean, everybody lives together in small groups of people. It's not, I mean, even when the Buddha was alive, there were people that the Buddha was closer to than other people. Okay? People that were the Buddha didn't know, that were strangers. Okay? And then people who, you know, he was around day after day. Okay, so we do have friends and strangers and maybe enemies also in that kind of conventional way. But that doesn't mean that we have to get stuck in attachment, anger, and apathy. Okay, so we can, you know, we can be close to people because that's how society works, that's how karma plays out. But it doesn't mean we need to be attached to the people that we're close to. Okay? There can be certain people that maybe we don't trust so much, or whose company we don't enjoy so much, but that doesn't mean that we have to hate those people or have resentment towards them. We can still respect them, have an equal-hearted openness and receptivity to them, not put them in a category of this is an awful person, but just leave some kind of openness and space there. Okay? Mm-hmm.
My impression, I think it's an important one regarding boy-girl friendship and relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd like to see the quality of a better girlfriend is less attachment, because most of the time when the guy don't spend enough time with the girl gets attachment. Why don't you spend time with me, you know, then quarrel starts, like, when the relationship actually breaks up, it's no longer sweet, it becomes the worst of enemies.
Mm. Okay, this is kind of standard operating, isn't it? Yeah? I don't think it's always the women who are so demanding. Yeah? What do you think, women? Do you think you're always the most demanding ones, or do you think sometimes the men are very demanding of your time? Hmm? It depends on the relationship, okay? But what happens often is that there isn't this sense of space, or that people have different senses of space, and one wants more space and one wants less space, okay? And then, of course, you know, you get people being demanding, people being jealous, you know. And I think a lot of that happens because of attachment. Yeah, when we become attached to somebody, we cling on to them, we hold on to them. And our attachment is a setup for having anger. Okay, the more attached we are, the more angry we're going to become. Okay, why? Because when we're attached to someone, we have all sorts of expectations of them. Yeah, I like you, or you know, we have a relationship. Therefore, you should always do da 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 da. Okay? And we have those expectations of the other person, and they have those expectations of us. And sometimes we aren't even aware of our own expectations. We're aware of the other's expectations and tell them that their expectations are too much. But our expectations are real and natural and not at all exaggerated. Right? Yeah. It's the other person who has incorrect expectations. So, you know, we have to look a little bit at our expectations instead of leaving them on the unconscious level, but let them be more conscious. And then to really, you know, look more closely what expectations are realistic and which ones are really not. Yeah? Okay, so we need to do some inner work on this level. Okay, so she's talking about an ideal relationship. She heard about giving a friend unconditionally, but isn't that kind of a paradox, because by the fact that they're already your friend, there's some conditions. Okay? I think, you know, in my own kind of thought about this and working about this, to recognize that, you know, a friend is somebody I respect very much for their qualities, but that friend does not belong to me. Yeah? That person belongs to the world. Yeah? Because it's true, isn't it? Every person belongs to the universe. No person is our own private property. You know, even if we're blood relationships. Yeah? Even if you're the parent of a child, that child is not yours. That child belongs to the universe. So I think if we have that kind of attitude, we can appreciate being with our friends when we're with them, but we don't hold on to them like our own private property. Okay? And if you think about it, if your friend has wonderful qualities, you know, and you think that person belongs to the universe, then it means everybody has the opportunity to enjoy your friend's good qualities. And if you see, you know, certain potential in your friend, you know, different aspects that they can develop and really excel at, if we think, you know, how wonderful that everybody gets to enjoy my friend's talents and excellences. You know, not just me. Isn't it wonderful? Everybody gets to partake of this person's qualities. So I think if we cultivate that kind of attitude and respect for our friend, it's going to prevent a lot of the expectations that often make relationships go sour. So I know with my close friends, I very consciously say to myself, you know, this person belongs to the universe. They don't belong to me. And it's not like I'm giving them to the universe. They were never mine. Yeah? So sometimes when we want personal space, it conflicts with the desires or wants or needs of other people. So how do we deal with this? And implicit in that is the question, are we selfish when we need our own space? It depends on the situation. Okay? I think we all need our own space, and it's healthy to have our own personal space, because if we don't have it, we become off balance and off center, and we cease to be in touch with ourselves. And before we can actually be a good friend to somebody else, we need to be centered and grounded ourselves, which means that we need some time alone to be able to reflect on things and understand ourselves. Okay? So I don't think it's selfish in making sure that we have enough quiet time so that we can do our practice and become our own friend and enjoy our own company. It becomes selfish when we say, I don't care about you, I'm going to do what I want. Okay? When we have that attitude of just not caring and only cherishing ourselves. But that's quite different, because if we know that to have a healthy friendship, we need our own space, then we take our own space also as part of having a friendship. Do you see what I mean? So that I don't think that's being selfish. Always, you know, whenever somebody wants something from us, we aren't always capable of giving others what they want. Sometimes we may wish to, but we don't even have the skills to be able to do it. So we have to be, you know, quite honest and not feel like failures just because we can't fulfill everybody's needs. You know, it's not our job to go around fulfilling everybody's needs. Yeah, I mean, we interchange, we relate, we help, okay? But if we get this attitude, like, I have to fulfill everybody's needs, I have to do everything everybody wants me to do, I have to be what everybody else wants me to be, then we cease to, you know, to be grounded and centered ourselves. Instead, we're always trying to flit around, living up to other people's ideas, which are constantly changing. Yeah, because one person wants you to be serious and the next person wants you to be funny. And you're trying to fulfill everybody's needs and you don't know who you are anymore. Yeah? It's good to be egoless and do what everybody else wants to do and be what everybody else wants to be. So I have a friend who's an alcoholic who wants me to go out drinking with him. And I go out drinking with him because I just go with the flow and I be what he wants me to be and do what he wants me to do. Is that right? Yeah? Or I have a friend who's taking exams and wants me to help him cheat on the exams. And so I just do what my friend wants me to do. That way everybody's happy. I help my friend cheat on his exams. You know, we have to use wisdom here. Yeah? Because sometimes when we talk about love and compassion in Buddhism, yeah, we get what's called idiot compassion or idiot love. Yeah, we need wise love, wise compassion, wise ways of caring. Yeah, caring for somebody does not mean we do everything they want. Especially parents. What happens if you give your child everything they want? Are you doing your child a favor by giving them everything they want? What do you think? You know, if every time your kid wants something, you give them that, and you go out of your way, you know, to find whatever it is your child wants, you're going to start having a spoiled brat who's not going to be able to get along with other people. Yeah? So I don't think it's kindness to your child to give them everything they want and do everything they want. Okay? Because your responsibility as a parent is to raise a person who knows how to function in society. And part of a quality we all have to learn is how to deal with the frustration of not getting what we want. You know? Because how are we going to go through life always getting what we want? If our parents just pamper us like that, we're not going to be able to have any kind of good relationships with other people in the future. Okay? So parents know very clearly they need to set boundaries for their children. And they can't give their kids everything they want. Sometimes as a parent you don't have it. Sometimes you know that even if you gave it to your kid, it wouldn't be good for them. Okay? So you know, being kind does not mean you give everybody everything that they think they want. Sometimes being kind means being very firm and saying no. Sometimes being kind means pointing out somebody's fault to them. Don't think kindness is always, here's candy, you know, and here's a pat on the back, you're such a wonderful person, you know. That's not necessarily kindness. Okay?
Can you comment on the coexistence of Mitra and normal friendship?
Okay, so Mitra means friendship, actually.
More spiritual.
Friendship.
And normal
friendship. Okay. Actually, when they talk about a Kalyana Mitra, okay, and a spiritual friend, the Buddha is our best spiritual friend. Okay? That's who should be our best friend. Okay? Buddha, Kuan Yin, Medicine Buddha, yeah, Wensu Pusa, these should be our best friends. Why? Because they're not going to betray us. They're not going to let us down. Okay? You can tell them all your secrets and they're not going to go blab them to everybody. Okay? And they're always going to understand you. But in terms of regular people, yeah, I think spiritual friendships are quite important, especially as Dharma practitioners. Our spiritual friends are, I think, the most important friends that we have, and we need to really take care of each other. So even, for example, there's a lot of people in this room, you probably don't all know each other, but if you see one of these people, even if you haven't spoken to them, if you see them somewhere else, you're going to know, oh, that's somebody who knows about the Dharma and values the Dharma, and you're going to feel a closeness to them, even if you didn't speak to them during this whole, you know, our whole workshop together, okay? So just knowing that somebody cherishes the spiritual aspect of life in the same way that you do gives you an open door to open to something very precious and to share something very precious. So that's why I think it's very important in Buddhist communities that we take care of each other and we build friendship with each other, because we really need to depend on each other to practice. Yeah. It was very interesting. On Monday night, I was with a group of people doing a Dharma guide training program. And I had met with them twice before and given them some assignments to meet together and meditate together and have discussions together. I had also given them some assignments to do a regular daily meditation practice. What happened is not all of them did the regular daily meditation practice, but they went to the sessions where they meditated and had discussions together, and they enjoyed those tremendously. They really, you know, found them very, very beneficial. So having those kind of friends that we can meet with and meditate together, talk about Dharma together, study Dharma together, those people are very, very precious in our lives. Okay, so it's important that we respect them. Now, working together in a Buddhist community, it doesn't mean we're always all going to agree on how to do things. You know, people are going to have different opinions. And, you know, one person wants to have lunch at 12, and one person wants to have lunch at 1, and one person wants to do Kuan Yin practice, and somebody else wants to do Amitabha practice, and somebody else wants to have silent meditation. Okay? We're going to have different ideas. But, you know, we can work together when there's this underlying feeling of trust and confidence. Then, you know, differences of opinion don't have to mean conflict, and they don't have to mean anger or mistrust. Okay? We can work things out together. And I think that's very important in working together in Buddhist organizations, that we have a basic sense of goodwill instead of a big sense of ego. Yeah, because if you're active in a Buddhist organization and you feel like, I'm the director, or I'm the committee head, therefore everybody should follow my guidance, and implement my ideas, and I'm on the board, therefore everybody should listen to me. You know, if we go in with that kind of idea, we're going to make a mess. And we're also going to be very unhappy. But if you're active in the organizational side of a temple or a Buddhist group, and you think, I am serving the people in this group, I am offering service by organizing things. Therefore, I need to listen to the people around me and see what they want and hear their ideas and work together with them. Okay? Okay, so if you're doing a job and they expect you to have skills that you don't have, then what to do? You know, you can't fake it, can you? If you try and fake it, it's going to really, really let your company down. So you have to go and say, I don't have the skills to do that, but I'm happy to learn, so please teach me. Yeah, you have to be honest. If you fake it, it's really a mess, isn't it? I mean, how would you feel if you were depending on somebody to do some work? You thought they were able to do it. They put on a face like they were able to do it, and in the end, they couldn't. You know? So it was much better if we're not capable of something to say, I don't know how to do that, but I'm happy to learn if you teach me. I think it makes things much easier that way.